KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You listen, if you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want next time.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right life. Peaches and cream.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, it's the high-stakes game of making television. Fox TV chief Kevin Riley tells it like it is about pilot season, the chemistry of casting, going with your gut, and the sweaty palms you get when you have to sell new shows to a room full of advertisers. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stay close. It's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
I'm joined in the studio by my fellow banterer, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So, Disney marketing. I have to tell you one of my favorite stories.
Go ahead. I'm all ears.
So they hired Rich Ross, who was the head of Disney Channel, to run the studio, an outsider, a TV guy, very successful at the Disney Channel. And then there was a big drum roll, and they announced, as everyone expected, an outsider was coming in to run the marketing department, someone with no film experience. And it is a young woman named M.T. Carney. She has come from a company called Naked Communications at Disney, of all studios.
Well, and I think the other interesting thing, too, is that she comes from what we would call a consumer brand marketing world, where she was working for Coca-Cola, Johnson & Johnson, Google, Microsoft. And I think it's totally consistent with the way Disney now looks at its movies. It looks at its movies and Pixar and Marvel, its studios, its brands. And it is in the brand marketing business, less the movie making business now. I think that's pretty obvious.
And I would say that this woman, you know, she will have her work cut out for her, because Hollywood, you know, which has a vested interest in the way things have always been done, is clearly going to be rooting for this experiment to fail. And there have been, you know, examples before where outsiders were brought in as marketing chiefs, and it has failed.
Well, Warner Brothers brought in Brad Ball, who came from McDonald's, and Brad did very well with the big tentpole movies. I think people who would look at his track record say the studio, and it may have been marketing, it may have been production, struggle with more specialty films, like Iron Giant would be a great example of
the critically adored animated film
that virtually no one saw. And you could say, was that a consequence of a marketing scheme that saw movies as products like hamburgers, or was it the fact that Iron Giant was ahead of its time? I don't know.
Yes, so we will watch that with interest. Speaking of other things that we will watch with interest, the futures exchange that has gotten approved by the Commodity Futures Trading Commission in Washington is now under further attack from the movie community. They have actually managed, the Motion Picture Association of America has actually managed to get legislation on the Hill folded into the financial reform package that would ban this trading on movie box office.
You know, there's a huge amount of argument. There's a lot of testimony in front of Congress about whether or not this is a legitimate business product, a financial instrument, or whether or not it's what the studios say, it's gambling. And it's yet to be determined if they're going to allow these things to happen. But it's been very interesting to watch how the studios are positioning it. It will destroy American jobs, and how the futures purveyors say this will create American jobs. So it becomes an argument really about what it's not.
It's very, you know, the studios definitely are very hostile to this, with the exception of Lionsgate, which has gone on the record apparently backing this. So the animus of the studios toward this thing is kind of remarkable to me.
Listen, everybody in Hollywood never admits it, but they make side bets on box office weekends, and, you know, there are office pools, and I think they just don't want to see it become publicly traded.
So Hollywood just is vociferously opposed to this thing, and we'll wait and see what happens.
But before that happens, Kim, I'm going to give you an option to play the futures game right now. You have to say buy or sell on these upcoming movies. Buy means you think they're going to do well, better than expected. Sell, not so good. Shrek Forever After.
Oh, I guess buy.
Robin Hood.
I think maybe sell.
Iron Man 2?
Buy.
Karate Kid.
Ooh, well, maybe, I don't know, kind of sell.
Sex and the City 2?
I guess buy, reluctantly.
Toy Story 3?
Bye.
Kim Masters, long on Hollywood.
Meanwhile, on a far less amusing note, the creators of South Park have been threatened, and they're Matt Stone and Trey Parker. The most recent episode had many, many beeps and saw images that said censored because a Muslim group warned the show's creators that they might wind up like Theo van Gogh, who was the filmmaker murdered in Amsterdam for making a film that was deemed offensive by certain, I guess, very extremist Muslims. And that's a scary threat.
No, and Matt and Trey are fearless creators. I mean, they've taken on any sorts of cultural icons and religions. I mean, they have a musical in the works for Broadway next year about the Mormon Church. So I think the difference is there are people that would take depictions of Muhammad so personally that they would react with violence. And it certainly has happened in the past. And I think the question is this, you know, risky art or is this kind of risky personal behavior? And I hope it's not the latter.
Well, it's unclear who censored what, the two creators, Parker and Stone. They issued a statement saying Comedy Central placed numerous additional audio bleeps throughout the episode. We do not have network approval to stream our original version of the show. So it's not quite clear who did what, but I think it is obviously the kind of threat that would be heard, you know, by any company that was in that position.
No, I think there's a very sharp line between blasphemy and satire. And the question is, did they cross it or did they get right up to the edge?
Mohammed depicted in this case in a bear costume.
I'd like to see MT Carney market that one.
I think that is definitely all the banter we have time for. Thank you so much, John.
Thank you, Kim.
John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. The first few months of the year are pilot season in Hollywood. It's a high-stakes period when ideas for TV shows can get one step closer to reality. If a network decides to order a pilot, a trial episode, the stakes couldn't be higher for everyone, from the cast to the crew. And if you're a network executive, your job depends on getting all that mysterious chemistry right, picking shows that might have a chance to survive in the overcrowded world of media and entertainment. Of course, the drama behind the scenes is often more intense than anything in the shows themselves. Actors, writers, producers can get so close to that huge break, only to find that the prize has been snatched from them. Just ask a guy like Patton Oswalt. He's a comedian who was going to be co-star in an NBC pilot called Beach Lane. But he found himself abruptly bounced a couple of weeks ago after he sat down with other cast members for an informal thing called a table read of the script. One guy who knows just how brutal this whole business can be is Kevin Riley, president of entertainment for the Fox Network. In 2007, Kevin Riley was unceremoniously canned as entertainment president of NBC, even though he'd championed shows like The Office, My Name is Earl, and 30 Rock. Riley soon bounced back. He took the top job at the Fox Network. Sure, Fox was already riding high with American Idol, but Riley has made his mark by throwing his weight behind Glee, which is now a certified phenomenon. Today he tells us what it's like to figure out which new shows deserve a shot, to try to be the Sully Sullenberger of pilot season. How many shows do you personally look at as ideas, as scripts, as pilots? What is your life like in this coming up to this?
Well, through the process, there's literally thousands of ideas, thousands. I mean, you never stop talking ideas. People stop you on the street, the waiter in your restaurant, you know, particularly in this town.
I've heard dentists in the chair and the rabbis for the couple getting married.
I've literally pitching. You know, heard it all. Everyone's pitching. Everyone's got a story. But then professionally, you know, in the halls, agents submitting scripts, a writer's cooked something up. Well, it's 5 minutes of your time on the phone, not to mention of which the... You know, during the pitch season, there's 14 meetings a day going on here, if not more, in various offices. I'm not involved in every one of them. People work with me. I rely on them to filter the ideas, to identify the ideas, and I dial in and out. And it's something that you've got to figure out because ultimately the buck stops with me. I'm going to be held responsible for better or for worse. So you've got to trust the people and that filter, and you've got to be able to get a little bit of a feel for it yourself. You know, you don't just say, well, I'll see you at the end, because you don't want to look up and say, well, I just hate everything we just bought.
But the decision to buy would be your decision, I assume.
Well, not on the script basis, but then as that rolls up and becomes, as you go through the process, you start spending more money on it, and the script becomes a pilot, and then a pilot becomes a series, and as it moves up the food chain.
So it's fair to say that, you know, you have your filters, your people who work for you, and there may be a few projects that each of them says, these are the ones I'm really hopeful.
Yes, of the hundreds they may consider or buy.
And they're keeping you in that loop.
Right. We may buy 60 scripts in a dramas, 60 comedies, and they're filtering that through. And I have my own that I've put into, either through a previous relationship or somebody, Ryan Murphy created Glee. I had developed Nip Tuck and put that on the air when I was at FX. I had a previous relationship. Ryan's first call was directly to me. Everybody from the programming to marketing was involved. That just so happened was a relationship that came in through me, and others come in directly through our development people.
So then you get to the point where you say, we're going to try a pilot.
Yeah.
I assume that's the next
step.
And you are going to be consulted. No pilot is going to get made without, I assume, your approval.
No. You chew your way through the stack of scripts. You identify your pilots. You pick up however many. This year we're making 18, 10 comedies, 8 dramas, and a handful of scripted, unscripted shows. You make that selection and you realize that this is going to be it. There's no turning back. This is going to determine to a large degree what your next year is going to be like. If you don't have something in there that's a winner, it's going to be a very long year the next year.
And you're not exactly going in thinking they're all winners. You know that they're not.
You know they're all not. You know that the odds are against you. Most things don't work because you, first of all, hope you find some things that you're passionate about that seem like they really have a cohesive vision and voice. But then the casting process, so many things have to line up. Stars have to line up literally and figuratively to make these things happen. And, you know, you think of a great show like Friends. If the chemistry had just not worked there, that could have been the most generic show in the world. But it works, and you discover a star, and all of a sudden, there's the show, particularly in comedy. It's just a complete high wire act.
Well, so how do you know when you're looking at a comedy and say, well, this looks just okay on the page, but I can do you go in thinking I'm getting this person, or go find me that person?
You're looking for certain, first of all, some cohesiveness of voice, something that feels tonally a little bit unique, that feels like it has a different rhythm, that feels like it has a character that may be castable. You know, to a large degree, comedy on television grew out of the old radio shows, and those were personality driven, you know, George Burns and Jack Benny. So still to this day, the Ray Romanos of the world, you know, if you can find that personality that brings it alive, that chemistry, and get the right person. We've got a comedy in development with Will Arnett. I feel like Will Arnett, he's a guy who has been funny in many, many different things. He was great in Arrested Development. He feels like he could be at the center of a show. He's handsome, great comedic timing, and you're looking for some marker in the script where you say that could be a castable character. And then you're waiting for somebody to walk in the door that just brings it alive. And I'll tell you, it's really clear when they do.
You know it.
You absolutely know it, and then you hope it somehow doesn't get away from you through the process, because that does happen.
In what way? You mean it sort of vanishes, whatever it looks
just,
like.
There was a spark. You know, what you're looking for is this little spark that you're going to just start fanning the embers of and hope that the spark turns into a flame, and then...
Well, we've seen a couple of stories this past week of people falling out at table reads for pilots.
Yes.
Is that really common?
It's the craziest thing. I can't tell you. You know, you read a script. There was something about it that spoke to you, that a number of people, I don't do this unilaterally. I do it with, we share our scripts at the pickup time with not only our development people, but our marketing people, our publicity
scheduling people.
Mm-hmm. We all weigh in. You go through that process, people agree on it, you get to the table, you've cast it, you're excited, you certainly didn't feel like you were wasting your time or money. You show up at the table read, and sometimes the wheels just come off.
And that's got to be a bad feeling.
There's been a fatal flaw in the script that has maybe evaded, you know, recognition. Or what happens is you cast these things individually quite often. In a perfect world, you would bring actors back in to read with other actors, and you'd look at your ensemble as they're coming together. But because we're in such a mad dash to get this done, and it's so competitive, if I don't cast somebody, they're walking across the street to the next network the afternoon, and they're going to be lapped up. Or our actors are out of the country doing a movie. They flew in to get one part. Now they're gone. So you see like a love scene being read with an actor with a casting director reading it off screen.
Right.
You've got to make that judgment call. Then you get to the table and you realize, oh my God, they're both perfectly good actors. They just don't go together at all. or somehow everybody that came in was really funny and wacky in their own way. And we got too much wacky, you know,
right.
And it's just such a delicate balancing act. And there literally is no net underneath it. When it doesn't work, it's like some infection has gotten into the air.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Fox President of Entertainment, Kevin Reilly. And we're talking about the trials and tribulations of making great new TV shows during the period known as pilot season. Like everyone else in the business, Reilly's had some misses. For example, the comedy that came from Fox's own in-house television studio and turned out to be a hit for ABC. So let's take one that you didn't do, a little painful memory, which is Modern Family. That came from Fox.
Yes, it did, yeah.
Which Fox, I assume gives a little bit of an Fox asterisk, studio. A little halo, and it comes in like this is your own homegrown thing, and wouldn't it be great if it worked? So what point did you not see Modern Family as a hit?
We weren't even pitched it, so fortunately I can say I never passed on it. The producers who had been under contract to 20th Century Fox and produced quite a few shows that didn't go forward over the years, there was ultimately, I would have to say, not the greatest relationship. They didn't really want to come into us.
They felt
like they'd had their fill at Fox. They had done Back to You for us, that Kelsey Grammer, Patricia Heaton show the year before.
Right.
I canceled that show. I thought it was perfectly good. It just didn't feel like Fox. And the guys, the producers felt like, you know what? We've been at Fox. Time to move on.
That's not the outcome you really...
No, that happens.
So I can see why the guys might have said, I'm not taking this one to you. And then they hit the tone.
Yeah. And Steve Levitan is a guy I've known for a long time. We developed Just Shoot Me together when I was in a former life. It became a success for Steve. And we had a little feisty period there after it went on. And he was still angry at Fox. And he and I, literally at the Golden Globes, I went up and he came in out of the rain. It had been pouring rain. And I started brushing raindrops off his thing. I said, Does this get us over this thing? And he started laughing, and we've been kind of joking ever since. So
let me return just to the process for a second. Uh-huh. So as you've thrown out whatever actors just don't seem to fit, would you drop an idea after a table read? Like, wow, that's terrible. We're just not
yes.
going.
You know, it really, there have been times where you just sort of right then and there pull the plug. More often than not, people try to change out, you know, on the fly, actors, leads. What happens is by that point, you've already built sets. You've already hired production.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the entire crew. So the irony is, even if you stop, there's virtually no savings.
Yeah.
So pretty much, you usually see it through one way or the other. But there certainly have been ones where I've just said, we need to stop this now. And I've had showrunners replaced in the middle. Had people doing rewrites underneath the table in the middle of them.
Underneath the table, another writer is coming in
and quietly rewriting a script in the back room, uncredited.
Right.
A lot of writers pull in their friends to help kind of do gang rewrites where they're, you know, maybe from their old staff saying, please come help, you know, I'm drowning. And we've had shows where they've literally worked around the clock, 72 hours without sleep. And sometimes successful shows go through that. There are even big hits where there was just a few dark days on comedy in particular, where one that comes to mind was News Radio, a show that I
with Phil
know,
Hartman
developed many years ago. Mm-hmm. We had, you know, Phil Hartman and Andy Dick, and it was just a great cast. It was a hysterical table read. It was great. We showed up for the first run through and it was a disaster. And they worked for around the clock to try to get it right. We pushed and said, let's do another run through and look at it. And there it was. It had come back to life again.
Coming up after a short break, we continue our talk with Fox President of Entertainment, Kevin Reilly. We want to hear your pilot season stories, so whether you're a writer, actor, executive, or crew member, go to the comment page for today's show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters, and we're talking about the high-stakes gamble of making television. Kevin Reilly is president of entertainment at the Fox Network, and he's been telling us about the brutal TV pilot season process. By the end of April, Fox will have created pilot episodes for 18 new scripted shows. After spending millions of dollars, Fox will be lucky if even one is a hit. Still, they have to decide where to place their bets. And once they've done that, they head to New York for the upfronts, the annual gathering of advertisers where network executives have to unveil their new shows. And for a guy in Reilly's job, the pressure is enormous.
After a pretty grueling and pressured process of trying to make the right decision, getting lobbied by agents and studio executives and producers and internal staff and hearing a million opinions of everybody who's watched them, you've got to clear your head and make the decision. You've got to financially see if it works and project it. You've got to pull it together and begin to start thinking about your marketing plan. And then at the end of it, put together a cohesive 1 to 2 hour presentation to 4,000 of your best friends and some
the
big
advertisers,
theater in New York,
which
are your advertisers.
And a few people like me.
And you've got to host the parties and get out and present it now to the buyers and to the world for the first time. And right then and there, there's going to be certain perception and buzz, and money is going to be sent down. That is where we're going to monetize a huge chunk of the next year.
Billions of dollars worth of
business.
Billions
of dollars worth of business is going to transpire. So it becomes a very compacted, very crazy process. You can be on a high through it, certainly if you've got something you like and it seems to have momentum and you can go and present it. I've been through it where it's just incredibly lonely and you realize you're, you know, particularly if it's something that you've picked that you believe in, but you've fought an uphill battle and you're trying to put a smiley face on it and you got a lot of skeptics and, you know, you have to go out there. And then sometimes you do a presentation at the upfront and the buzz doesn't take and maybe you didn't cut your trailer right.
Right.
So a lot of moving parts and it's pretty crazy.
I remember being at a party after one of the presentations and I think a couple of guys, maybe including you, were talking about the symptoms that they undergo the night before they have to go on the stage at Lincoln Center or radio. I mean, somebody had a rash and somebody had the runs and it's really that bad.
Well, it's really, what's difficult is that it is weird. I am not personally really thrown by speaking in public and I've done enough, you know, when you first learn to read a teleprompter, it's really intimidating. You can be snowblind just getting sucked into it. And it's a real skill to learn how to stick to your talking points and look at your monitor, but then not be glued to it and to speak from your heart with some passion. But then when you realize you've now made extemporaneous remarks that have nothing to do with the thing scrolling in front of you,
how
not
do you
to
get
panic
back?
And find your way back again. And we rehearse it quite a bit. We go over and over and over that show because if your show is boring, your presentation is boring or flat, that could affect the business is going to transpire. That's going to affect the buzz and perception coming out of there.
It's incredibly terrifying.
So yeah, some people literally are sick to death. Some people are medicated. I don't, fortunately, I'm not either one.
Now I'm going to be looking
at
it.
But I can tell you, it still is not, it still is a pretty, it's a kind of a mind-blowing thing that is, takes all of your skill sets.
Moving forward now, you've made your choices, you've had your season, as the sun sets, when you have bubble shows.
Yes.
I mean, you have a show that you, I think, is not a bubble show, but would be probably on another network, which is Human Target.
Yes.
Show you like a lot, right?
Yes.
And the critics seem to
yes.
like. And yet, it's not
It's not in this first season hit those ratings.
So when you decide bubble show, you're looking at a last season of 24. I mean, what governs?
A bubble show is a very, very tough call. And there's two different categories. A new show that has not grown yet, and you're asking
like
yourself.
Like Human Target.
Like Human Target. Will this show grow? Could it catch a wave and all of a sudden, thank God we stuck with it? And there have been many historical examples of shows that you stuck with that turned out to be a winner.
Seinfeld.
Everyone Loves Raymond. Cheers. You know, some of the biggest shows. House was a hair's breadth away from getting canceled on Fox. And then it went after American Idol, and then the rest was history. The other form of a bubble show is a mature show that is now diminishing in ratings. You know, you don't ever want to get rid of a show that has worked for you, that's been an important part of your legacy, or a show that still has a passionate audience. We've made the decision to not bring 24 back. I've gotten emails from all over of people saying, it's my only show I watch. You don't want to do that. But there is a certain point where you only have so much shelf space, and you have to make a judgment call. When do we literally have to kind of restock the shelves? Because what happens is, if you hang on to the old successes for too long, there's a point where they all seem to go at once. And now,
which we've seen happen at other networks.
Yes, when I came into NBC,
for example,
there had been many years of fallow development. There had been no new shows going in, and even the big hits were getting older. And as the West Wings went away and the ERs got old, and then finally Friends was the last tentpole, all of a sudden you looked up and it seemed like there was water coming in from every direction. And that's really what you want to avoid.
Right. So what do you decide? You're listening to your head, your gut?
The piece of advice, cheap advice that everybody gives you when you take one of these jobs is follow your instincts. And it sounds so easy, but it's very easy to get twisted around, because there's people that you've had success with before who maybe now are pulling up short, and it's very hard to kind of go against that. They've delivered for you. You know they're talented, but maybe they're not hitting it now. There's people, and this happens quite often, that have delivered a new pilot. You're worried that they're maybe now going to be able to do the series machine of it. Wow, they just did one good one, but can they do 22? You've got a lot of agents in your ears, producers in your ear, your staff in your ear, research, everything twisting you around a little bit. Quite often the research is not exactly aligning with your own instincts. And at a certain point, you can't tune all of that out.
Research meaning you have a focus group.
You have a focus group. Mm-hmm. We've got reports. We've observed audience telling us what they think. If I have all of those contingencies telling me something's terrible, odds are it is, you know. And it's really great when something you love and think is great, everybody else agrees. Unfortunately, those rarely happen. It's usually the ones in between where you know or believe there's something inspired, and when can you reach for it? One of the things that kills a lot of shows is that what makes up a showrunner in television is two diametrically opposed things. Number one, you've got to be an artist,
right,
a writer.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Most people who became writers did not really want to go study management courses, business courses, marketing courses. They liked creativity. They wanted to be alone. They had no problem sitting in a room looking at a blank page. You know, these are generalizations. Now you've got a television show. You have hundreds of people that are reporting to you. They're all looking at you saying, what do we do? You have got to keep a machine, a multi-million dollar machine that comes with budgets and responsibilities. You've got to deal with the politics of the network and the studio and the different agendas. You've got to deal with marketing. You have to keep your own writers on track and keep a story afloat in the pipeline. That is a tremendous management responsibility, which quite often is not the skill set that the great writer has. It's very rare to get them both in the same person. So quite often you'll see something picked up that has some promise, and that showrunner, by week three, they have no color in their face. They haven't slept a full night's sleep. They haven't seen their family. They're behind the eight ball. They're drowning, and they can't get out of it. And then the work starts reflecting it, and there's literally nothing you can do. It is a very stressful thing, and it's very unfortunate when you look at a show that's promising, and if they had more time, but we're not in a business that gives a lot of time.
Brutal business.
You're picked up. Weeks later, you're in series production, and it's really hard to change the wheel at 75 miles an hour.
Kevin Riley is president of entertainment for the Fox Broadcasting Company. We spoke with him in his offices on the Fox lot in West LA. Thank you, Kevin. It's been great.
My pleasure. A lot of fun.
And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from J.C. Swadek. Matt Holzman is the executive producer of the show. Our theme music mashup was designed by beat architect Jason Grohman. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. If you have any questions or thoughts about the show, write us at thebusiness@kcrw.com. You can also listen to this or any past program and comment about the show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can listen to our podcast, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button from our media player at kcrw.com. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.